This is going to be the greatest radio show in the history of the world.
It's going to be lit.
I got so much love for our radio program.
Bickley and Murata.
Welcome to the greatest radio show in the history of the universe.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
This is the greatest radio show of all time.
Bickley and Murata.
You're listening to the greatest radio show that has ever existed.
The greatest of all time. I can feel it right now.
The greatest thing ever.
It is.
Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit.
It's the greatest thing in the world.
Happy Football Friday to all you Valley sports fans. Vinny and I, this is rare territory for us. Back on the road for a second day in a row.
Yeah, Monday we'll be on the road, too.
That's outstanding.
That'll be three straight.
Cardinals headquarters.
Yes.
I hope Monday's show will be as fun as today's show.
How do you know today's going to be fun?
Oh, I feel it. Believe me, I feel it already. We have got so much good stuff to get into. America's team is the Cleveland Browns, and we are trying to become them, Vinny.
Yeah, the Arizona Cardinals, as we speak, are looking up at the Cleveland Browns.
We are trying to become them because of what went down with their quarterback last night. Let's start this thing right now, Jarrett. Hit it.
The Splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world.
The Splash.
All right, the Cleveland Browns, you and I finally got a Thursday night game right. That's item number one. We picked the Browns to win, and they finally did.
Of all the teams, and I'm not even exaggerating, I don't have the exact number, but I think I've missed, like, going into last night, 15 Thursday night games in a row. It was just uncanny. And I picked the Browns, and then when I'm watching a team that hadn't won since December 2016 with a four-point lead, whatever it was, three-point lead, third down, they need a first down to kill the clock and kill their opponent. Third and six, they run the ball. They play it conservative. I said, here we go again.
Right.
The Browns are going to blow this.
Yeah.
But that's how inept the Jets are. They couldn't take advantage of that mistake.
First win in 635 days, and it became, well, they've been a thing, as we've talked about, and this became an event. LeBron James tweeting out congratulations. Really?
He's a Cowboys fan.
You left Ohio for Los Angeles, and you're a Cowboys fan. Quit gravy training. J.R. Smith does the same, and lo and behold, he wasn't wearing a shirt. Imagine that.
He brought that back?
Yeah.
You know what the key to the success was? It wasn't Baker Mayfield. It was the rally
possum.
It was
the rally possum.
I've never seen anything like that before in my life.
Oh, I know. No, look, we've had a skunk in Oakland already. And now we've had a possum on the field in Cleveland. Really?
They better get some rodent to State Farm Stadium quick
for
Sunday's
that.
Game.
You have any ideas?
A raccoon.
Where are you going to find one of those around
a
here?
A trash panda.
Somebody would have to go to Flagstaff to get that raccoon.
It's a 2-hour drive. To turn around the fortune of your franchise, I think it's well worth it.
Good luck trying to put that thing in a bag.
Yeah.
You know how nasty raccoons can
be?
Did you hear the funny story? It was online someplace about a bunch of yo-yos, and they all had like an interlocking device on their car. And they were all hammered. And they went and tried to catch a raccoon so the raccoon could blow in the interlocking device so they could leave. And there were pictures of these guys, and they were torn to bits trying to corral a raccoon. Come on, Rocky. Blow right here. Come on. We got to get on the road.
How did they know the raccoon wasn't drunk?
That's a great point. I mean, those raccoons spend a lot of time in garbage cans, man. There's a lot of thrown out, you know, beer.
Very, very true.
Oh, you're not kidding.
Very true.
What a bad move. The biggest part of this, though, folks, is how it applies to the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday. What you saw in Cleveland, well, there was a lot of booing. There was change at quarterback. And then it was the Baker Mayfield show. That's going to be a big topic of our conversation today. You want to chime in on Baker Mayfield real quick?
We got 4 hours to do it.
We got 4 hours to do it.
We can move on.
Move on. Item number two. Vinny is leaving on a jet plane after the show to go and
don't know when I'll be back.
That's
again.
Right. Somehow I'm kind of afraid you might be serious.
No.
ASU.
You think I could spend more than 2 days around Seattle, people?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you're going to spend one more day. Well, actually not. Today is Andy Greenberg's last day, by the way.
Yes.
What are we going to do special for him? Anything? Can we, like, put together his wackest takes?
I think we should give Andy sometime during the show today.
Yeah.
To get out all of his unpopular sports opinions all in one shot. So he leaves nothing left.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Not only that, maybe just anything you want to say about all of us and the ridicule we've given him.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
We should
have Andy Greenberg, yeah. Airing of grievances.
Ending of the Greenberg-esses.
Yeah. I don't know. You get to see and hear a lot of that from former employees. Why shouldn't Andy come on and just kind of throw a lot of that stuff out there?
What are you getting at, Vic?
I'm just saying. All right, ASU Washington, how do you feel about it? You excited? I mean, you wouldn't be going to the game if you weren't interested.
Interested. I've always wanted to see a game up there. It's a great setting. I'm looking forward to taking in what might be, it's one of the top game day settings, if not the best in the Pac-12. It might be the best team in the Pac-12. I don't think this is going to be a blowout, though. I think ASU is pretty ticked at themselves at how they played offensively against San Diego State.
Yeah.
Not saying they're going to go out and score 60 points or anything, but I expect a more consistent offensive effort. I still have a little bit of doubt about the Washington Huskies from what I've seen so far. So I don't think this is going to be a 17-point blowout. I don't think Washington covers. They probably win the game, but I think it's going to be a pretty good game.
I like what you said here. Game day settings in the Pac-12. USC, UCLA, they'd have to be up there, right?
They're okay.
For iconic settings?
They're okay. I mean, Oregon, the scene at Oregon is good. I've seen a game up there. That's great.
Yeah.
And I saw it right at the beginning of kind of their move towards dominance.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I mean, they opened the gates, and there were students sprinting to their seats to get a seat for the game.
Yeah. Pullman, not so good. Tucson?
I've been there.
Not so good?
No.
What about Tempe?
Tucson is the Native American word for Pullman, I think.
Yeah, but the city of Tucson, by the way, has got the coolest name for an indoor football league team that I've ever heard in my life.
The Sugar Skulls.
Oh, it's just outstanding.
Great logo.
Oh, and it has so much cultural significance.
Yeah.
You know?
They done good,
yeah. All right, so ASU football, we're going to get into that, a big game. If they want to make this a dream season, then you're going to have to beat Washington. Do they have a chance? We'll find that out. Now, tonight... Chase Field, the Diamondbacks, Rockies. The demand for this game is off the Well, no, it's actually not. It's actually not. But there is a lot of interest in this game just based on Torey Lovello and what he did in the last game and how this team is going to respond.
Are we going to see Patrick Kivlahan in the lineup again?
There's no way, no how Torey Lovello would go back to that well again. I heard people saying they'd run the same lineup back out there. I think Gracie said it. Heck no. If your whole idea was to cattle prod some guys, some core players you don't think have energy or enough positivity or maybe have kind of quietly conceded, well, you got to throw them back out tonight and see if that worked.
If you're... in the top 1% of the optimistic people on the planet, and you happen to be a Diamondbacks fan, tonight begins this run of the last gasp that they have.
No doubt.
If they can run this weekend against Colorado and then next week against the Dodgers, it sounds like an impossible task, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But this is where it begins tonight. With Zach Greinke on the mound against Germán Márquez.
And then you wonder, will this be the last gasp of Paul Goldschmidt? He had that MVP moment, Vinny, in that game against the Braves that they lost. Down to his last strike, went deep. He's had one RBI since.
Is that right?
One RBI since that game.
So you're saying he's not going to win the MVP?
Well, let's see what he does now in this next series of games. What if the Diamondbacks just run the tape? Okay, let's not get ridiculous. Those are your items for the Splash today. We are broadcasting live. All you listeners who want to come see us, we're in Chandler, the grand opening of the AT&T store. We will be here until 2 o'clock.
Yep, 4145 South Gilbert Road, corner of Gilbert and Ocotillo. It's brand new, great new shopping center out here. We've got prize giveaways. They're unveiling the new iPhone XS. or the Samsung Note 9. You can get a free smartphone on us. Stop by to find out details on that. Plus, tons of D-backs Rockies tickets.
Yeah.
If you want to get out to the ballpark maybe one last time before the end of the season, we got some tickets for you if you come out and say hello.
Yeah, we are on Gilbert Road, just past Ocotillo, one way or the other, depending which way you are coming. So that's where you can find us today if you are so inclined. We welcome everybody to come on down. All right, let's get into last night, the football game, and what it meant. When you watch a football game like last night, and Tyrod Taylor is struggling the way he was, and then the fan base turns on him viciously to the point where, oh, my arm. Now, I'm not saying Tyrod Taylor wasn't injured and had to leave that game, but you knew which way that game was going regardless.
Well, he had a concussion, so they're not going to mess around with that.
They're not going to mess around with that, but he was coming out of that game regardless because that was a groundswell of emotion and desire and demand from a fan base.
Well, it was a perfect storm of events. It was the Browns getting their spotlight on national television. You know, feeding off the buzz that they got from Hard Knocks on HBO. They had a beatable opponent in town.
Yep.
Taylor wasn't playing well. I think all of those and the injury actually helped make that move, too, for the Browns. So it was a perfect storm. It was a perfect blend of all the ingredients coming together.
It definitely was.
To their credit, they took advantage of it, and that's not something you expect from the Browns.
No, it's really, really not. So Baker Mayfield comes out and takes the field, and he plays with a lot of moxie. It was pretty clear the moment wasn't too big for him, and it was very clear that he just took control of the moment. I love what Kurt Warner had to say about Baker Mayfield. He said, you look for quarterbacks like that who trust their arm, who fire the ball to places, who anticipate receivers being in certain places, and just go with it and play aggressively and lead with just with a lot of fire. There's an old saying, Vinny, and I believe in this, and it goes, be bold and you will awaken powerful forces. You may not even know what they are, but if you are bold in what you do, it creates something. Baker Mayfield came
into
that.
Sounds kind of scary.
Baker Mayfield came into that game, and the Browns receivers seemed to be stretching out, trying harder, focusing harder. Everybody was sharper. It doesn't mean that the Browns players wanted Baker Mayfield in there instead of Tyrod Taylor. What it does mean is that everybody on that field is an athlete slash entertainer slash performer, and they felt the energy of the crowd, like all performers do. Mm-hmm. And when that energy was boo, the kind of stuff that Steve Wilks was playing for his team yesterday, it can bring you down. When the new guy comes in and the crowd goes nuts over his first completion, now you want to be part of that. And that's what you saw last night. Now, can that be translated to Josh Rosen and the Cardinals on Sunday?
It's a good question. I think they're two separate, completely separate incidents, certainly. But a lot of the things that go into what we're going to see on Sunday were on display last night. Cleveland Browns fans are some of the most patient people in the world. And you saw last night was kind of the night, because you have this guy waiting in the wings in Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick. He's waiting in the wings. That patience ran out. We're not going to sit here and watch Tyrod or Tyrod or Turd, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah, that guy, Turd Taylor, get him out of there.
We're not going to watch him go four for 14 for 19 yards and get sacked and fall behind the New York Jets by 11 points. Their patience ran out. I'll say this about Arizona Cardinal fans. They're not as patient. They haven't dealt with the heartache, certainly, that Cleveland fans have, but there's also a level of expectation here.
Yeah.
The last 2 years have been hard enough, and those were mediocre, near 500 seasons for the Cardinals. That fan base that sticks it out, goes to that game, if the scenario is similar, if they're struggling to move the ball, if the receivers aren't making the plays, they fall behind the Bears and put themselves in another situation where they're going to have to throw on every down, that's going to be an impatient fan base.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a fan base that's calling to go to their quarterback in waiting, Josh Rosen.
Now, yeah.
Now what Baker Mayfield did last night, and he ended up winning the game for Cleveland, that's where the similarities end. It doesn't guarantee success for Josh Rosen if he gets that opportunity on Sunday or beyond. Because, quite frankly, I think the Browns' offensive talent is better than what the Cardinals have.
I agree with that.
I mean, not necessarily at running back, but I think they got more receivers that make plays. Their offensive line is definitely better.
Okay, I agree with that. But the bigger question becomes, if Josh Rosen is as good as Baker Mayfield, could he lift the Cardinals through quarterback play? The question very simply is yes. If Sam Bradford's lack of good quarterbacking is the primary problem we've seen over the first 2 weeks, not the only, but the primary, then good quarterbacking can fix probably a lot of it, boom, just like that. The question now becomes, and I think all of the murkiness about this is all coming to light, and that is this. Josh Rosen, as you pointed out yesterday, was the last guy drafted among the peer group, and hence the 9 mistakes, which have now been cut down to 3 mistakes. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the last guy out of this class to actually play.
Yeah, everybody else, I mean, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold,
Josh Allen,
and Josh Allen have all either started or taken snaps.
They've all played. So that being the case, do you think what happened last night is going to make Josh Rosen want to play faster, want to be out there any sooner? Do you think it heightened his...
I think he wants to be out there now.
Okay. I hope that's the case. But I think after seeing that, everybody is feeling this story, and the story is this. Quarterbacks can come in as rookies and do what Baker Mayfield did. Do they do it very often? No. Baker Mayfield, Josh Rosen. These guys are different but similar. Similar because they're exceedingly confident in what they can do. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to go out there and I'm gonna. They're not going to be that guy. So could that lift up the Arizona Cardinals? Item number 2. With the composition of what that stadium is going to look like on Sunday, could Arizona and State Farm Stadium ever sound like Cleveland did, where the booing, the crescendos of it all, got to a point where everybody can feel it? Everybody in that Brown sideline could feel it, and it adds pressure to making that change. In a stadium that's going to have a good portion of Bears fans in there on Sunday, would the crowd at State Farm Stadium be loud enough to affect change?
It won't. I mean... It won't be up to the crowd to affect change. It's got to be up to the coaching staff and the general manager in the front office to make that change. It's about the crowd.
I disagree.
When have you ever seen a crowd in Phoenix affect change on a field?
Okay, no, I'm not saying in Phoenix. I'm saying in general. This, to me, is one of the rare times a crowd can. You've got a team on a field, and that team can sit in boardrooms all week long and say, you know what, let's hold this guy back. It'd be better to bring him back here. Maybe we'll roll him out here. When you get down on that football field and you've got 70,000 people booing you on national television, you want it to stop. You don't want to put this forth to the nation that, oh my God, if they're booing us, the whole nation is going to see that our fan base thinks we're idiots. You don't want that to happen. I'm not saying that a coaching staff is going to put in an inferior quarterback just to pacify the masses, but when you get that kind of buildup in a stadium, I think it can influence the way they
think. Well, here's another factor to all of it, and I heard Doug and Wolf talking about this this morning, and that is the Cardinals. I don't think you want to throw a rookie quarterback into a situation where, okay, the crowd is hostile. They want change. You're down. Your offense has been terrible for 2.5 games, if that's indeed the example. They don't want to throw him into that situation. They want him to start clean. It's kind of like a relief pitcher.
Right.
As a relief pitcher, you'd much rather come in and start a clean inning as opposed to coming in, inheriting the bases loaded and nobody out.
Especially you play for the Diamondbacks.
Now, is it avoidable? I don't know. It all depends on how Sam Bradford plays, and I don't have that much faith in Sam Bradford really turning things around because he looks that broken as a quarterback. Steve Kine, the general manager, was on with Doug and Wolf today. To me, this boils down to one thing. Cleveland did this out of necessity because Taylor got hurt, and you saw the results. The situation might be different for the Cardinals, and the word spark was thrown around a lot earlier this week by head coach Steve Wilks. The guys asked Steve Keim today, do the Cardinals possibly need a spark from somebody like Rosen?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's a secret that it needs something. But more than anything, like I said earlier, it needs some balance. It needs to be able to run the football effectively. We need to protect better. We need to run crisper routes. We need to get more separation. There's a number of things that go into it. Excuse me. And quite frankly, a lot of guys need to play better. I know they're being put into the right positions and positions to succeed, but But as we know, when you're running a new offense, a new defense, sometimes there is a transition. And guys have to feel comfortable to play fast. Again, that's not an excuse. It's just the facts. And I think with time, we'll continue to grow and get better under both these schemes.
It's a weird situation that this team is in right now, because there would have been people, let's say Sam Bradford played like Ryan Fitzpatrick in the first two games. There'd be people in that stadium on Sunday wearing Cardinal red that still want to see Josh Rosen play. The Cardinals might be, and I didn't think this would happen at all this year. We talked about it when they drafted him and Sam Bradford came in. Best case scenario is Bradford comes in, plays lights out, Josh Rosen doesn't have to play a snap this year. That would be the best case scenario. The worst case scenario when that was all laid out was don't play Josh Rosen too fast because you can really wreck a quarterback. I didn't think the Cardinals would be bad enough to put a quarterback in a situation where his future could be in jeopardy from a learning standpoint, a confidence standpoint, all of those things. But we're here. The Cardinals are that bad. So if they make that decision on Sunday, if Bradford comes out and stinks up the joint again, and they go to Josh Rosen, they're saying, all right, we're accelerating this, but we have no choice. And
yeah, okay.
And consequences be damned, we might be wrecking this kid for a long time.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. I would counter it by saying this. When you look, you can look at this and think, okay, when is the best time to roll him out there? Because we have to give the job to him at some time if we're really that bad. So what is the easiest landing spot? And I heard Doug talk about like a scenario where you're playing games against teams that may or may not be that difficult like they are now. And I thought to myself, yeah, that makes sense, but that's also thinking out of fear, and it's babying quarterbacks, and it's partly why Sam Bradford has no rhythm or confidence right now, is because this everything about the approach to the season has been, okay, how do we nurture these guys? How do we get the quarterback through week 16? How do we keep these guys safe? That is not the attitude that wins football games. The attitude that wins football games, we were reminded, is the attitude that Baker Mayfield took to the field last night. And so to me, I think we need to rewire the way we think this thing and quit thinking about when's it going to be safe for Josh Rosen to play, and maybe embrace the idea that he might be capable of going out and doing what Baker Mayfield did. I'll tell you what, he's already vowed that he is going to spend his entire career proving to people that he's better than Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. Okay? You don't think he wants to start right now after what Baker Mayfield just did? I'm not saying it's the smartest thing, but I think here's where it gets murky. And I think Wolf brought this up very well this morning. Once you make this move to Josh Rosen, that's it.
Yeah.
That is it. You don't go back from that move. So at some point in time, you have to say to yourself, did we give Sam Bradford a fair enough shot?
Mm.
Now, it's real easy right now to say, forget Sam Bradford. We've seen enough of him. But these first two games have not looked like him. And for whatever reasons, that might be between the years, between the lines. Those are the questions that I think make it murky. How much time should we give Sam Bradford if what he's done in the first two games is really atypical and not at all what we thought we were buying?
It's a great question, but I think I have to say, no, it wouldn't be unfair to pull the plug on Sam Bradford because of those things. I mean, he was temporary. If he was great, he was a temporary option. Agreed?
Agreed.
He's not in the future of this football
team. Agreed.
So if you're going to go out and play three horrible football games, kickstart the future a little bit sooner. I'm still on board with Josh Rosen. I just want to lay out all the things that could happen.
I agree.
And I'll say this, too, on the confidence thing. Yes, Josh Rosen, his confidence level is almost up there with Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield's one of the cockiest, and I don't mean that as a knock, cockiest, most confident young players I've ever seen in any sport.
Yeah, right.
But your confidence, even if it comes in at a very high level, can be shaken very quick when the other 10 guys in that huddle aren't doing their jobs.
Okay.
And you heard everything Steve Kime said about spark, and you heard Steve Wilks say it on Monday, if it was just the quarterback. I'm telling you, Sam Bradford has been terrible. That is not an exception on this offense. Everybody's been terrible.
You're right. And in that light, the Cleveland Browns were very close to winning a couple of games already before last night.
Yes.
Cardinals haven't been anywhere near winning.
I was going to make that point, too. You kind of read my mind. The Browns, outside of Baker Mayfield, probably went into last night's game feeling they should have been 2-0.
Right. Now, in honor of playing possum last night in Cleveland, okay, we came up with the idea of a raccoon. Ryan, a listener, tweeted us, a raccoon slash trash panda was caught swimming in my friend's pool in a neighborhood by 56th Street in Greenway.
See? You don't have to go to Flagstaff.
Yeah, just go to this dude's
Ryan's
pool.
Ryan's friend's pool. Join Burns and Gambo starting at 2 p.m. live today from the Albertsons on 83rd Avenue in Deer Valley in Peoria. They'll be giving away tickets to upcoming games, plus telling you how to win some incredible prizes through Safeway and Albertsons' Score Great Deals promotion this football season. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details. I can't even say it's a big weekend series. It's a weekend series for the Diamondbacks. Are we going to see the same lineup we saw on Wednesday night from Torey Lovello or some variation of that? We'll get into that next. It's Bickley and Marotta. We're live at the AT&T Store Grand Opening in Chandler, Gilbert Nocatillo Road, here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Live from the AT&T Store Grand Opening in Chandler, 4145 South Gilbert Road, the corner of Gilbert and Ocotillo. It's Bickley and Marotta. Two straight days outside the Ocotillo Community Studio.
Yeah.
Three in a row on Monday. We'll be at Cardinals headquarters. We'll be talking about a win. We'll put that on hold for a second.
And two straight golf tournaments where Tiger Woods is competing for the
lead. Oh, come on, man.
He's tied for first with Ricky Fowler. Why are they even still playing golf? I thought the season was over. What are they doing?
Why are you bringing it up?
Well, because look, Tiger Woods tied for first.
For now.
At the East Lake Golf Club.
For now.
For now.
Okay. To win a tournament, you got to put together four solid days of golf.
Okay.
He has yet to do that.
Okay. I'll listen to you, because you're like Johnny Miller.
Roger Maltby.
Once again, we love Stadler. We love our listeners so much. We went to break, and we had a room full of people who just dropped by to say hello. And it's so inspiring, and it's so awesome, and everybody still tells us, don't stop doing dueling gambos, everybody. I mean, it's like, it's clearly comedy gold.
For us.
George Foster. All right, let's
kind of an inside joke that thousands of people are in on.
Right, that's exactly what it is.
You're going to say something, Jared?
Your default dueling gambos is always the 70s Cincinnati Reds.
Always.
I've noticed.
I know. Well, it's the George Foster name that Vinny just nailed so good. I just always go right to that one. You know, it doesn't even matter what team or what group of athletes you're talking about. I'm just going to slide in a George Foster.
He never played golf.
Did you hear that promo where Gambo's talking about how he says the word sauces? His sauces? Like,
I don't say sauces. I say sauces. Yeah, what he says.
Right, what he said. It's perfect. All right, the Arizona Diamondbacks at home tonight against the Colorado Rockies. This is not going to be like the series against the Cubs. There's not going to be a lot of energy in the ballpark. It's really kind of the last gasp is what Vinny said. Even though most of us have, boom, shut the book, the math says they're still alive, and they've got a couple of teams in front of them, literally, and they'll play the Rockies and the Dodgers. And that will be it for the home schedule for the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2018. So what's on the line here? Pride? Do you want to see this team rise up? I think after what we saw the last game, what this team has to do is look a little bit differently than they did before they were collectively benched. And I don't even know what that means, but Torey Lovello does, and he made it clear he was looking for energy.
Uh-huh. June 28th, if you go back to that day, Diamondbacks were in Miami. Greinke was great. They won 4-0. On that date, they were 47-34, 3.5 games up on the Dodgers in the West. It was the last time they were 13 or more games above 500, according to what I'm looking at. Since that day, the Diamondbacks are 32-40.
Ooh.
I'm just going to present this as a question for discussion's sake only. I'm not saying I believe this, although I might be swayed to the side. Torey Lovello is getting torched by the Diamondbacks fan base, right?
Yes.
He had a run where pretty much every decision he made blew up in his face. There were some curious decisions. There were some ones that were by the book. They all blew up in his face. During this run where you've seen this deficit now going into this Colorado series be at 6 games and they're pretty much done. Do you think it will ever be thought of when people look back at this 2018 season that maybe Torrey Lovello was the reason why the Diamondbacks were in this race as
to
long as
with?
They were.
Do I think that it's possible?
Because his offense has stunk all season long.
Yeah.
The bullpen has been bad for half a season. The defense has collapsed.
Yep.
Maybe without Torrey Lovello, this is a last-place team from day one. I'm just bringing it up
okay.
as a possibility.
All right. I don't think a manager is that influential. But, yeah, I do think Torrey Lovello has done a good job this year. I think he's pushed buttons that didn't work. But I've seen enough of this baseball team to know that you're going to push buttons that don't work. It's just the way it is.
I mean, take what you know out about the National League West, this race and everything. Just look at the Diamondbacks as a team in a vacuum. Watching this team every game, did it seem like a playoff-caliber team to you?
No. No, it didn't.
For most of the season, it didn't to me either.
I mean, April, the way they played in April just seemed so crazy in how easy they made winning look. It was almost as if they had reached like an Atlanta Braves level where they just kept winning series and winning series, and you looked at them, you're like, well, it's not that impressive, but they keep winning. No, they haven't been that team in forever, and it's part of the frustrations of it all. Is and then you think about this. So say a team comes and starts really hot, takes a commanding lead in the division, they're 21-8 and you believe in them, and they were a playoff team last year. And then they start to struggle, and your eyes tell you, you know what, these guys might not be that good. And yet the division around them isn't that good either, which allows them to hang around and hang around and hang around, spending most of the year in first place. What are we mad at? Are we mad at a team that an average, mediocre, maybe even subpar team that didn't grab an opportunity that was right there? Or are we mad at ourselves for just going, you know what, why do we even pay attention in June and July? I think we were all chasing that ghost of what we saw in April, including the baseball team, and nobody's found it since.
Well, a lot of times what you watch in June and July is indicative of what you'll see throughout the rest of the season. There's a good enough sample size where you get a good feel about a team, and you're like, okay, this team's going to be in this race. And many people felt that about the Diamondbacks. Here's the thing that will frustrate me when this season is over. A couple of things. Starting in June and July, when we talked about the National League West, it was always described as a three-team race between three very flawed baseball teams, but somebody's going to win it. And that team's not the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
That will be maybe the most frustrating part, because this was an infinitely winnable division. And they didn't have to be great to still be in this mix. This should be a really big series. That's how bad they've been recently. They didn't have to be great, and they weren't great, and they stayed in for most of the season. That's going to be the lasting frustration for me when this is all said.
Yeah, and I think that's universal. I think that's going to be shared by everybody. This season has had so many anger, flashpoint moments. There have been rotating scapegoats from that offense in May to the bullpen in August and into this total collapse and meltdown we've seen in September. I will say this. What happened the last game against the Cubs when he threw out that AAA lineup and they responded the way they did? Not only did it shame the current core group of players, or at least I hope it did, it pretty much branded them a failure if they don't have a miraculous finish. Because already yesterday, I was thinking about this. I mean, was it absurd for us to even ponder the idea, should Torrey Lovello have made those moves earlier? And you think about it, what are the chances that a AAA lineup like that could ever duplicate the game they just did on the Cubs? I mean, what are the, really, honestly, no, what are the odds of that?
I think people are discounting the fact of where the Cubs were. The Cubs came in, they won the first two games of the series, they're in the race, they're playing their 30th game in 30 days. They were exhausted, they wanted to get home. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
They did what they set out to do. They won the series.
Yeah.
It's like when a struggling team calls a team meeting before a game against some cupcake opponent, and you go out there and get the results.
Or you do your ace takes
them
out.
Now, I give the Diamondbacks, the guys that were on the field the other night, credit. They played a really good baseball game. It was a one-hit shutout, and they got offense from unlikely sources. That was great. But I don't think that the Cubs factor, their mindset, was considered enough in that whole discussion.
I think you're right.
I think you could roll out that same lineup tonight, and you might get three hits.
I think you're right on the money about that. And that is why that's the genius in the timing of what he did, because not only were the Cubs at the end of that hellacious road trip, and like you said, it was so bad it got to the point where they were mocking what they had to do by never taking their uniforms off. And it was just kind of a way to bring attention to look at this challenge that's ahead of us. After that second game against Arizona, I'm sure they thought, all right, we'll clean this team up and get home. This team has got no pulse. Then they saw the lineup card, and they probably laughed.
Yeah. They probably thought they were going to roll out there and just
exactly.
win a game.
And then that didn't happen because Robbie Ray was sensational, and you know everything fed off him. I don't think Robbie Ray gets enough credit for what happened.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah. So it's
if that Robbie Ray would have showed up earlier in the season, we might be having different discussions too. It's not all on him.
That's right.
Certainly not all on him. It was a team collapse for the Diamondbacks, but that's the Robbie Ray everybody was waiting for.
Yep,
and
it is.
And he finally showed up when all the pressure was off. Pack a bag and join the 2030 Club of Phoenix for the 10th annual Phoenix Suitcase Party Friday, October 26th. The night will be filled with food and drinks from the Valley's top restaurants, live music, auctions, and a chance to win a trip on a private plane to and from Vegas or L.A. Head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for details and your chance to win tickets. It's going to be cold. It's going to be rainy. Do the Sun Devils have a chance in Seattle? We'll explore that next. Bickley and Marotta are live from the grand opening of the AT&T store in Chandler, Gilbert Nocatillo Road, here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Bickley and Marotta, powered by Ram Trucks. Built to serve, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
We got a little rain today, which was kind of a, I don't know if it's good.
I hit the wrong one. I meant to play this one.
No, they're pretty good on all three phases. They really are. They've got a really good offense. They have a veteran quarterback, similar to ours. Got a really good two running backs. Got some wide receivers. They're a balanced offense. They're going to take some vertical shots at you down the field. Defensively, they're stubborn. They don't give up a lot of points. They really don't. They're averaging about 10 points a game right now. So they don't allow you a lot of points. It gets noisy up there. That helps your defense, especially when you get teams into bad situations. You get behind the chains. They can bring pressure. They don't bring a lot at times. They'll drop eight in coverage. Do a nice job of playing in the secondary. They're a well-orchestrated group. They have a lot of experience. So this is a good test for us.
Herm Edwards, Arizona State head coach, looking at his opponent for this week, the Washington Huskies, 7:30 kickoff. Saturday night from Husky Stadium in Seattle, a game you can hear on ESPN 620 AM.
And, yeah.
It's going to be televised nationally on ESPN as well. This, talking about that veteran quarterback, Jake Browning, and he said it in the soundbite, similar to ours in terms of experience level. This is a game, Bick, that could come down to which quarterback is dynamic.
Yep.
And now a lot of things have to happen for ASU to for that to be the case. I mean, their defense needs to play better against the run, certainly. They can't have a lull offensively like they had against San Diego State and expect to win this. But if they play up to their capability for 60 minutes, it might come down to which quarterback is better and more efficient.
Yeah.
And I don't feel bad. If it does come down to that, I don't feel bad about ASU's chances at all.
I don't either. I think a couple things about this game, Vinny. Number one, you look at the way that ASU beat Washington last year in an upset. It was, what, a 13-7 game?
Mm-hmm.
So they did it with defense. It was in Tempe, so that obviously makes a difference. I hope inside the program, I hope that this actually comes true, because I know it's become a talking point, that ASU defensively was a little more vulnerable against a team like San Diego State that knew Danny Gonzalez because he used to work there than a team like Michigan State
True.
Was, and maybe a team like Washington will be this weekend. I think with what Washington has, ASU is going to have to excel defensively. And I know it was easy for people to make fun of the scheme that Danny Gonzalez runs against San Diego State, especially when you're starting to get gashed via the run. But I think any element of surprise or all of that, there was too much familiarity at San Diego State with the defense they were about to face. So maybe that works in ASU's favor going forward.
That's a good point. On that game last year, which was kind of one of the shockers of the football season for many people locally, when ASU upset then top five ranked Washington, Herm Edwards did comment on that game earlier this week.
Well, I think it helps. It was a defensive game for the most part. They did a nice job of shutting them down. And here again, Washington came on the road. It's hard playing on the road. I tell people that all the time. It's very difficult playing on the road. And
the defense did a great job last year keeping the score down, and you know, they missed a couple kicks, I guess. I don't really know what happened, but they were able to win. And that's a sense of confidence. But now you got to go on the road and try to beat them up there. And you know, anytime a good team has a standard to play, you can expect they're going to play like that. And that's how these guys play. That's why they're so consistent. You know, that's why they win the way they win. I mean, it's certain teams, when you have a DNA and you have it built into your program, every game's big to them, because when you win, you want to continue to win. I mean, so you almost put the pressure on yourself, and that's what we have to deal with. You know, we had a little winning streak, and we had some momentum. Now we got to try to build it back. You know, that's the tough part.
Yeah, that will be the tough part for them tomorrow. Look at Jake Browning, the quarterback for Washington, statistics. Again, we talked about this earlier this week. I don't know if you saw Doug Haller's piece on The Athletic. He asked analysts to break down the quarterback matchup in this game between Wilkins and Browning. But the point was made in the piece, too, that Jake Browning set such a high level, high bar of performance for himself and that program his sophomore season. He finished sixth in the Heisman voting that year as a sophomore from a Pac-12 school. And he's not lived up to that since. And through three games this year, 55 of 93, 764 yards. That's under 60% completions. Four touchdowns, four interceptions. He has not had any success really running the football either, which he's athletic, but he hasn't had any yards on the ground either. I'll say it. ASU's got to play a really good game, but this is a beatable football team tomorrow.
Yeah, I kind of have come around to that and believe that this game should be tighter than the point spread should indicate. Maybe it's because, Vinny, Chris Peterson, he's building something good there, and it's taken him longer than I think a lot of people thought. He was, to me, a great impact visionary coach when he was at Boise State, and he was known for really good creative offense. People wonder, how is it possible if you have a pair of seniors in Jake Browning and Miles Gaskin that you're not lighting up the scoreboard a little more consistently? Why are you so underwhelming offensively? I hope that they don't find a groove this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible too. When you look at the games that Washington has played, they've played two of their three games against a really good defensive football team.
Yep.
Started up against Auburn at a neutral site. They were on the road in Utah and managed three touchdowns. That was the game where Gaskin finally got going, 143 yards on the ground. But Jake Browning was very pedestrian in that game too. 14 of 24, 155 yards, a touchdown and a pick. From what I've seen, one of the reasons I feel good about ASU going into this game, not necessarily to win, but certainly to make it a ball game and have an opportunity to maybe steal a win, is I haven't seen the same defensive deficiencies that plagued them for the last 3 years of the Todd Graham era. I mean, that period of time, Bic, was marked by big play after big play after big play.
Yep.
And you can even just hold up the last two San Diego State games. San Diego State last year not only beat ASU, but they blitzed them for, you know, 80-yard touchdowns and 50-yard touchdowns. They were running wild on that team.
Yeah.
ASU, for the most part, through their three games, hasn't been victimized by the big play just yet. Washington can do that to you with Gaskin, with their receivers, but I just think this mindset is so far away from what it was defensively a year ago that this might be an opportunity for ASU to surprise a lot of people again.
I hope that is the case, man. And I wonder, this is a second straight road game for the team. It's their second ranked opponent. They seem to really embrace the challenge when they played Michigan State. The San Diego State game, it's hard to fit into the whole narrative. And again, it might be wishful thinking that San Diego State had a lot of familiarity with what ASU was coming at with them defensively, which allowed them to run the ball, tilt the game, throw the ball five times in the second half, and kind of hit ASU in the face. And ASU's got to do that to Washington this weekend. I said it before, I'll say it one last time. You play a team like this on the road, there's a reason why the odds makers have this thing so sideways. And I think it's what I said earlier. I think people look at Washington and go, okay, that team's going to get it together sometime pretty soon with those off, and this probably might be the time. ASU's going to have to establish some ball control, and they're going to have to convert third downs. They've been really bad at that, and there you go. It's the next challenge in front of them.
So I'm looking forward to that game tomorrow.
Yep.
Sun Devils and Huskies, 7:30 p.m. Again, you can hear it on ESPN, 6:20 a.m. Coming up, we all know the quarterback has to play better for the Cardinals, but a lot of other people do. Who are we pinpointing that needs to step up for Arizona on Sunday against the Bears? We'll discuss that next. Bickley and Murata live from the AT&T Store Grand Opening in Chandler, Gilbert Nakatillo Road on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.